Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. I have Mateen filling in for Qasim today. And our guest today is Paul O'Brien. So, Paul, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Hi, everybody, and thanks for having me. I'm in Austin, Texas, where it's exceptionally hot right now, as I'm sure you all know, in 2023. I run a company called Media Tech Ventures. We do what's called venture development, which means we create startup ecosystems. If you've ever wondered how Austin emerged in the last 10 years as being a popular startup hub, or how other cities or governments figure out how to accomplish the same thing, they call us, and we put the infrastructure and programs and ecosystem in place that helps entrepreneurs thrive and helps investors take advantage of that.
Awesome. So how did you get the idea to start this company?
I was in Silicon Valley for about a dozen years. I started my career at Yahoo. And moved on from Yahoo to Hewlett-Packard, where I learned very quickly that I couldn't stand working for big companies. And so I left HP, thanks to some angel investors, to get involved in the startup ecosystem. And about 15 years ago, found my way to Texas after the mortgage crisis, the banking crisis in the United States. That transition to Texas was, of course, well in advance of what Austin and the rest of Texas has become for startups and tech. But it certainly was also after a lot of tech in this part of the world. Freescale and AMD and IBM were all some major companies here. Of course, Dell is as well. And it was this discovery of the fact that the old technology ecosystem that once was Austin or was Texas is much more like technology and innovation in the rest of the world. And that's very unlike the way it is in Silicon Valley. And so the launch of Media Tech Ventures was really just a question of, or a matter of trying to figure out how economies develop and ecosystems develop in ways that are different, depending on whether or not you're looking at companies and businesses and workforce development versus venture capital, angel investment, and startup development. Two completely different sectors of our economy. And so, of course, they operate and need to develop in drastically different ways.
Funny thing is, our last podcast, because right before, he was also a former HP employee.
A former HP employee. Doing what now?
He has like his own company.
You know, HP, a lot of those technology companies are, frankly, are well-regarded for being proving grounds, or breeding grounds rather, for startup founders. That some of the best advice that we provide people is the fact that startup founders tend not to in fact be successful out of college. The likelihood that you're going to take an entrepreneur studies class, graduate with a four-year degree or an MBA for that matter, and be a successful founder is exceptionally slim. It's much more likely after a decade working with tech companies or working in really innovative ecosystems in venture capital or in some way with how startups operate.
Yeah, it's funny because like for me, I'm almost 30, so I do remember HP, you know, how big they were when I was really young. But I feel like people who are 10 years younger, I mean, can never understand like what HP, like what they're just making printers, you know?
It definitely changes, but it changes at a much slower pace than anything else, as hopefully everybody's well familiar with. You know, there's a reason startups are incredibly disruptive to the economy. There's a reason startups result in most of the new jobs that emerge. There's a reason that startups are required for us to have drastic changes in the way things work. And it's just because established technology, university systems, commercialization offices, they just don't move at the same pace. They don't take the same risks. And so for all of the benefits that come from this ecosystem, it's important to appreciate, too, that there's a lot of risks and a lot of heartache and a lot of loss in our world. That's quite a bit different than having a nice, stable career or a job at a company that's happy to employ you for a long time.
Sure. So in terms of your business, what makes you better than your competition?
You know, it's funny. We teach people that there's no such thing as not having competition. But when you work in these, what's called the startup development organization sector, which is what we do, it's a mistake to treat things as competition. There are a handful of organizations in the world that do very aggressively try to retain all of the customers and make themselves the best and make everybody think that everybody goes through them. What tends to be more effective in our world is that we work together. So we work very closely with things like NBC Universal's Lyft Labs and Techstars Music, both of which are what would be considered accelerators after us. We teach founders how to start companies through this venture development process. And there are a lot of people that teach founders how to start companies. Sure, they're competitors, but the reality is if anybody knew how to start startups effectively, they would be a trillionaire and they wouldn't bother teaching everybody else. They would just start everything. that you know, at the end of the day, nobody is right. Nobody is best. Nobody is correct. We teach from a methodology to answer your question, Dan. We teach from a methodology that organizations need to be much more marketing led and understand how to develop media and develop communications on behalf of what they're doing. That tends to result in a better rate of success because we're forcing founders to study the market and forcing founders to communicate what they're working on, something a lot of founders don't do. And that is quite a bit different from, you know, something like Lean Startup, if you're familiar with it, or developing business plans and business models. We have an approach that works really well for certain people and certain things. We try to work with as many people as possible to make that available to everybody.
First point, I was just talking to a friend of mine yesterday, like there's so many different like marketing gurus and marketing strategies. Like for me, like I really love Alex Hormozi, but like so many people don't even know who he is. So I think it's like everybody has these different people who they're sort of following. Like this is the way to do it, but there's so many different ways to kind of do the same thing.
We're big advocates of the fact that we already figured out what marketing means and is 100 years ago. Nobody is reinventing the wheel. Google didn't reinvent the wheel. Facebook didn't reinvent the wheel. TikTok isn't going to make you famous. It isn't going to make you a successful company. It all ends up coming back to the same principles of marketing that have already always existed. Usually what you see when you engage a guru or some agency that wants to study a certain methodology is that they're in fact just familiar with a certain channel and they're trying to sell you that particular channel because they're an expert at it. Good for them. But they're often doing so at the expense of the many other channels and the many other ways in which you got to be effectively marketing in order to be successful. Nothing changes.
So if a founder was going to come and work with you, what stage are they going to come and work with you? Is it like right in the very beginning, you know, when they're just getting started, or would they have been in business for a couple of years? Like where do you usually see most of the people that are working with you? Like what stage are they in?
Yeah, it's a good question because it's an important way to distinguish what we do. So the founders that come to us are pre-seed, idea stage, generally people that need or want to be taught how this works. We're not in the business of launching a startup. We're not in the business of accelerating a startup, which is a later stage kind of program. We're in the business of teaching founders how to do startups. And that education, that teaching is very different than entrepreneur studies at school. It's very different than business, you know, business administration class. We run a 3-month curriculum that forces you to get everything done that's necessary to get a startup off the ground. Whether or not you're going to be successful is on you and what you're doing. We just teach you how it works. So the people that actually work with us, which is what I'd like to distinguish, the people that actually work with us are companies, investors, or cities and governments that want people to learn that. We actually get paid by larger organizations. We get paid by governments. Sometimes we'll get paid by a group of investors who want to teach a group of startups, a group of founders, how to be more successful because, of course, they're investing time and energy and resources into those individuals or into that ecosystem, and they would prefer that they be a little bit more successful than would otherwise be the case.
So in your experience, are there certain, you know, qualities or skill levels that you see founders that are successful? Like I know right now there's a big debate about, is college even necessary? So, you know, do you think that's something that helps somebody, you know, be more successful, or is that not needed? Just like, what have you seen with the people that, you know, that you've worked with in your career?
So did I mishear you, or did you say that you are a 30 or in your early 30s?
I'm turning 30 in a few months.
Good. Congratulations. Happy birthday. There is no debate about whether or not university is valuable. We have known for decades that university is irrelevant to being a startup founder. It has no basis of success, bearing on success at all. That research has been around for decades, and the internet didn't change anything about it. If anything, what you're seeing is that universities are attempting to have more startup programming. They're attempting to have entrepreneur studies. They're attempting to have entrepreneur programs. That's a symptom, not an intention. And the symptom is that you have a bunch of students coming into this university, paying $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 a semester or a year, and they're asking to learn about how startups work. And so the universities are providing it. It's not that going to a 4-year school and getting a 4-year degree is going to make you a successful startup founder. That's not correct at all. The indicators of success are also pretty well known. Unfortunately, given your age, the primary indicator of success is age. The average age of a successful startup founder is 46 years old. That hasn't changed in about 15 years. It's about 46 years old because the second leading indicator of success is that the person has worked at an innovative company related to what it is that they want to be doing and fixing. If you know how that sector works, if you have connections in the industry, if you can easily get partners or customers or investors, you've accomplished half the battle. And so work somewhere that is consistent with what it is that you want to be doing. Third is the distinction of entrepreneur versus new business owner. If you seek to start a startup to make money, go home. Go home. The great majority of startups don't make money for a long time, and certainly cost a lot of money to get off the ground successfully. And so people that are successful with startups are people who are just exceptionally passionate at addressing and solving a problem. And you refer to that as entrepreneurship, as opposed to being a new business owner. Entrepreneurs are those people that just seem constantly fixated on fixing things and investing themselves, doing it themselves. Those kind of people tend to be more successful startup founders because they're able to put up with the frequent no's, the frequent disruptions in what they're doing, the very long runway to getting revenue or customers, and the almost incessant hesitation from anybody to help you or to work with you or to be involved with what you're doing. That takes a certain personality type, and it's one that most people are just born with or grow up with because it's a cultural characteristic. It's a set of social skills that are very, very different and very, very unusual. You'll notice, by the way, most of the people that are successful working for startups or founding startups are also the same people who are not very successful working for a company, right? They're disruptive, they're frustrated, they're bored. There's probably a reason for that. I can relate to that.
Yeah.
A lot of us can.
Yeah. So in terms of, you know, you mentioned earlier that you're in Austin. So how much has that helped you in terms of growing your business? Are you mostly working with people in Austin? Like, what does that look like for you?
No, Austin. So think of what we do in a pretty unusual way from most of the companies or businesses that your audience might be familiar with or hear from. We don't work in Austin. Think of Austin instead as our proof of concept. You know, if you were to say, what evidence is there that we can build a startup ecosystem? Well, see Austin, come to South by Southwest. That didn't happen organically. Right. That's a result of a lot of other people, including us, including myself. It's a lot of a result of a lot of people who collaborated and explicitly invested and focused on the startup sector of the economy and the industry here. That when we engage with other cities, we're talking to Atlanta, for example. One of the things we'll frequently point out to Atlanta is we do not need or want the Chamber of Commerce and the small business programming and the, you know, the SBA in the room. If you truly want to develop an innovative ecosystem for startup founders, it requires a different set of priorities and focus and collaborations. And that's foreign for a lot of places. That's foreign for a lot of cities to exclude the folks that are typically in the room. But you have to do so. You have to make sure that the people we're working with are the people that really understand what it takes to build startups, really understand what it takes to deliver returns for venture capital, and really understand what it takes to position that properly in the city and in the community where you live and work.
So what specifically about these government organizations, like the SBA, for example, do they, qualities that they don't have? Are they more focused on, old, maybe brick and mortar businesses as opposed to tech companies? Like what specifically about them makes you say, okay, that they should not be in the room and having these conversations?
Yeah, great question. And appreciate everyone that tech has nothing to do with it. So it's not tech companies versus other stuff. I mean, you can certainly have consumer packaged goods or a new food company that is technically a startup. The difference is that a startup is temporary. It's not considered a business. It's not considered a company. It is formally and legally established that way. But we don't think of it in the same way that we would think of a real estate firm or accounting firm or a Dell. Right? It's a very different type of entity. We refer to it as temporary because its objective is to figure out a completely new business model. And once it figures out that new business model, obviously it becomes a company with customers and costs, a business model. The reason it has to figure out a business model is because one doesn't exist. If a business model already exists for what you're doing, arguably you're not a startup, you're a new business. And hopefully therein you can understand the distinct differences in the type of people that need to be in the room. A small business association is focused on helping people start businesses. Why? Because we know how to start those businesses. We can show you how to start that business. We can help you start that business. We can give you a grant for an office space or to buy the infrastructure that you need for the restaurant that you're going to open, because we know what that looks like. We know what the economic impact is going to be. We can expect you to be successful because you're a business owner. We can't do the same with startups. With startups, we have to know that the majority are going to fail. The majority are going to disappear. The majority are not going to result in anything valuable. And in fact, they're going to use and consume resources. If you're not capable of doing that, if you're not ready to do that, if you don't know how to handle that and turn those difficult opportunities into something substantial, then you're just not cut out for this space. And you shouldn't be cut out for this space, because when business advisors and business mentors get involved in the startup ecosystem, we often find they're giving people bad advice. They're often giving people advice that is oriented to an operating business, but a startup is not an operating business. So we've got to be focused on what it is that they need in order to be more successful, as opposed to what a business would typically focus on in order to be successful.
So at least one thing I've noticed is that in other countries, if they give grants and they help startups out way more than in the US. Have you seen that as well? And if so, like, why is that the case in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, to a great extent, you're getting into politics and the implication of the United States on the rest of the world. One, politically in the United States, there's certain subjects that are just hot button issues that are dangerous for politicians to get involved with. Education is one of those things, right? We all want better education. The problem is the more money the U.S. government allocates to education, the better we'd expect it to be, and yet it's becoming more expensive and less effective. See, so it's a dangerous situation. In the U.S., due to being a much more free market economy, an unregulated economy, capitalist, if you want to refer to it that way, working with startups is frankly sort of a dangerous sector for politicians. Why? Because most things are going to fail, right? So how do you be a politician and say, hey, we're going to allocate money to develop all of these new companies, and all of these new companies are going to result in new jobs, and we're going to be disruptive, and we're going to have a great return on this investment, when in fact, it's highly likely that that's not going to be the case, that won't happen. Given the way this country runs, it just so happens that the startup stage, the startup sector of our economy, is much better left to the private sector, to companies, to organizations, to for-profit entities. Other countries and other governments either don't have the same circumstances because they're managed economies, or they're not as free market, in which case the government is heavily involved, or they have other circumstances where they need the government involved to protect IP or protect the security or national interests, or it's a country or region of the world where, frankly, they're so far behind economically. It's an economically depressed country where they don't have private sector funding available. They don't have private sector resources available. And so instead, they take what they can get from the government and they hopefully use that as a catalyst for everything else. We can work with everything. You know, in our context, it doesn't really matter where the capital comes from. Again, it's a question of the expectations and the objectives that the organization is trying to reach. And as long as they're focused on what it takes to be startups, we can make that work anywhere by putting the right things in place.
That makes sense. So what is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started this whole entrepreneurship journey?
What's the one bit of advice I wish I knew? Increasingly, the world is one in which it is expected that you do it yourself. That used to be the case when I was in my 20s. You know, if you could build a website, you were more valuable to companies than others who couldn't build their own website. But my point is, increasingly, it's a foregone conclusion that the best thing you can do for yourself is to do it yourself. Start your own podcast. Look at what AI is doing. Do I care if the article that you send me came from ChatGPT or came out of your keyboard and your mind? I don't really care. What I care is that you, the author for that content, are compelling, are creative, are innovative, and that you can draw an audience and influence people. And so notice how in what's happening with AI, what's more important in the new world is that you're that author who's doing it themselves. Go ahead and use a tool, I don't care, but you're doing it yourselves because you're much more valuable as an employee or as a freelance writer or as a creative professional or as an author, if you can indeed just do everything that you need to do for yourself. When we're looking for people to work with startups or to work with us, I don't recruit, I don't hire, I don't interview. I say, show me what you've done that proves that you are capable of doing what it is that we're in need of. And if you can just show it to me, you can start tomorrow. If you can't show it to me, that's my advice to you, is go back and figure out how to do that and do it for yourself and then call us back and we'll get you involved in the ecosystem.
Awesome. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your website or best way to get in contact with you?
Yeah, the website is mediatech.ventures, mediatech.ventures. I write an exceptional amount about startups and venture capital and so forth at SEOBrian.com. Those are the best ways to get a hold of me. If not those two, I'm pretty easy to find on LinkedIn because I'm there all the time.
Awesome. Well, Paul, thank you so much for your time. It was great chatting with you. Let's definitely keep in touch.
My pleasure, everybody. Cheers.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks. Bye.